Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are halfway through the month of August.
Yeah.
In the year 2016. What is the date today? It's the 1616.
Oh, my. What does that mean?
It was lucky.
It's a special. You know what you should do for that? You should donate to the No Agenda Show. It's a special
we do
date.
That all the time. Yeah, we always do that with special dates.
Yeah. So, by the way, for the No Agenda Show, you have a, well, what is the 333, the 33? What is that? What is the importance there?
We don't know.
It's just a number that shows up.
All we know is that it crops up all the time. Either 33 or 333 or something in various news stories that seem bogus to begin with.
Hmm.
It's some sort of code. I mean, we've been following this for 8 years.
Wow, interesting.
People always say, "Well, it's the number. It's the Grand Mason. It's the highest degree Mason you can be," and all this other. No, this goes way back. This 33 thing goes way back. It's got nothing to do with the Masons.
Is it like? When you shop at Walmart, the clothing is like 988, kind of those kind of things where they think that number is something that people can absorb and deal with versus, you know, you can't have something $10.02. It's got to be 99 cent, you know, 1099, 899. But now, no, that's not good. It has to be 88.
I don't know what that's some sort of research they did on pricing. But 88 is another magic number. So don't know.
Anyway.
I have no idea.
Let me tell you about markets. Volumes have been just paltry.
Yeah.
Anemic. It's as a matter of fact, the last week, there was a few days that volumes were lower than holidays, which is very unusual for the summer. You know, you definitely get a layoff on volume, but to have it as low as, you know, a half day on a holiday sometime, it's just unbelievable. It's, you know, this. I don't know what the reason is. Maybe people are just catatonic.
Everybody took to heart, sell in May, go away.
But at the same time, buyers are pushing up markets, creeping them up a little bit lower. We saw, actually today, we saw a half a percent. It was like a market crash. You haven't seen these kind of moves on the downside. And, you know, every time there is a downside move, there's an instant buy.
Yeah.
So there's a new, or not that new, but a phrase that people are using. Why is it happening? Why is the market going up? Why are people buying stocks? You know, valuations are out of whack. The economics don't support this. And Tina, have you heard Tina?
No, but I've read about it.
Yeah, there is no alternative.
Yeah, well, there isn't.
Yeah, well, that's true.
What else are you going to do? Put your money in Shanghai stocks?
Not going anywhere.
Japan?
Not going anywhere.
Indonesia?
Either. No.
South America?
Possibly. Not Argentina, Venezuela. Although Brazil is up 66% this year.
Oh, well, that's going to end quick.
There's so many funny things going on with the Olympics. I mean, some great things. But, you know, all these volunteers quit. And
yeah.
we have a story coming up tonight about what's going on with the free giveaway by Samsung with the phones.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to talk about Twitter. Because I thought there was a story this week that was just, I thought it was, when I first read about it, I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. At first I was like, I don't really, well, what's the benefit here? I don't really understand. And I started thinking about it. Twitter is in negotiations and talks with Apple to put Twitter on the Apple TV. Now, just thinking about that right there, it's like, okay, who cares, right?
That would be my first thought, yes.
Okay.
Who cares?
I mean, who's going to go on there? First, you know, light up an Apple TV, you know, the device that you hook into your TV so you can get various streams and buy movies and things of that nature. And by the way, I have Comcast. I have the X1 Xfinity system, which I think is a great cable platform. Really works well. I got this little remote that when you touch it, it lights up so you can see it at night. It's got a little button you can push for a microphone. You say like Olympics or you say, you know, I want to watch golf or something like that. And it comes up with all sorts of things. Very cool. However, buying movies on there, let's say there's a movie that's $5.99 if you want to buy a movie. You can go to Apple TV. It's always a buck less.
Always?
Pretty much always, yeah.
Huh.
It's usually much cheaper. But anyway, so this Twitter thing, so I started thinking about this. This is pretty interesting. But then I realized Twitter has the rights to stream the NFL games this season, right?
Ah, yes, it does.
So now if Apple...
That would be a good reason. Yeah, okay, I get it.
You see this? Now, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
So if Apple gets the ability through a negotiation, maybe a payment to Twitter, to have Twitter on the Apple TV, in a way, you could probably see the NFL season.
Yep, without having to pay, without Apple having to pay a huge fee to the NFL.
How great is that?
Yeah, that would be good. Now, that's, I don't see what the NFL could do about it.
I mean, it depends on the contract. If the contract says, something like there's no rebroadcast of this, or,
it's
probably...
It's not a rebroadcast. It's coming over Twitter.
Exactly. So I thought that was pretty genius. I would venture to say that when Twitter did this, they weren't thinking this was possible. This was just somebody...
I get the same impression. I don't think they're that bright.
And somebody came up with this thing, probably Apple. I have an idea here. Why don't we just get the NFL? How do you get that? Well, I don't know who's getting it. We could buy it from the NFL for this price and that. Twitter's got it locked up. But hey, what if we put Twitter there? Twitter's suffering. If we put them on the Apple TV, that's a good platform for them, and we get this for free. So I think that's kind of cool.
Twitter should actually pay Apple to be on the platform.
But I thought that was pretty cool. So now Twitter is about over $20 a share now, which is pretty. It's been on a quite a run recently. At the same time, you can see they're still suffering because it seems that about a quarter of the space at Twitter's headquarters in San Francisco is now for sublease.
Right.
Which
they're right downtown too.
Which I thought was interesting. The next part of this storyline, which adding to a growing amount of excess offices available in the city as the technology industry cools. Now, what's really interesting about this, we have seen just story after story how hot things are in the technology area. But meanwhile, all these office spaces are available. Is technology cannibalizing themselves with the need for people?
I don't understand the story. I don't understand what's going on. Just to be straight up about it.
Yeah. Well, it seems that there's a lot of office space available. And about this second, let's see, it's going to 78,000 square feet.
There's always been a lot of office space available in the city if you know where to look. And companies are going in and out and in and out of business. And the prices have been jacked up, which have forced some companies to downsize. So I think it's just a combination of things. I don't think there's anything that I would call a slowdown. And I determine that by the traffic.
Well,
traffic is worse.
Yeah. Now, Cisco downtown San Francisco, some of the headquarters must have some office space.
They should be down in Mountain View. I mean, they may have something up here, but they're headquartered down south.
They're laying off like 10,000 people.
Why?
I don't know. Because I guess obviously, if you can't get your share EPS going due to share buybacks and lowering the cost of your debt, the next thing is to lay off people. I suppose.
I always wonder about some of these companies if they just hire people for that purpose.
For what purpose?
You hire 10,000 extra people, and now you have a little cushion. You got to get your EPS up a little bit. Fire half of them. They don't do anything. They're so, like ballast.
They're like seat fillers at various shows.
Yeah. Mm. Ballast. Ballast. Way to put it. Sandbags.
GoPro shares have been on the move, by the way.
You got to get that thing. You got to get that balloon going up to throw a couple of sandbags on.
Ah, I see. Just a little bit of something that you have some breathing space. Like what the Fed doesn't have right now, by the way. So, similar to that, where the Fed, if they were at a 2% rate, if things weren't going good in the economy, well, they can just simply throw a sandbag off and lower interest rates.
Yeah.
They can't do that right now because they have no sandbags left.
And let me ask you a question about Cisco. How do you get rid of 10,000 people? What were they doing?
Yeah. And who's...
They weren't sandbags.
I know people in a variety of businesses. One particular I'm thinking of that recently laid off like 130 people probably about total about 3,000 employees. Okay. So, maybe it's not on the same scale, but in terms of this, but it was, I was talking to them and a couple of people I knew were the people that were charged with the responsibility of laying out the news. You don't just kind of like just to make an announcement. Hey, we're laying off people. Thank you. Goodbye. You walk in the office the next day and you have a box on your desk. I mean, a lot of companies will go through the process of, you know, exit interviews and making sure you go through human resources and all this good stuff, because of course they don't want any backlash.
Yeah, or somebody coming back with a machine gun.
Right. So I know this guy who was in charge of laying off, or, you know, breaking the news to about 100 people, and he was distraught for weeks having to tell these people this.
Yeah. Did you ever see that movie with George Clooney, Up in the Air, yeah, whatever it was called?
Actually,
it was about this.
I'll tell you a story about that. I was on a plane to Las Vegas. I was sitting up front, and I see George Clooney is two seats in front of me. And he's wearing kind of a, just a, like an undershirt and whatever. And I'm not going to be interesting. I took a little picture of him for my wife. Hey, look who's on the plane with me. I started talking to this woman next to me. She had a little baby. She was very nice. Start talking. We're talking. I don't know who she is. We're just talking. And the whole ride, we're talking. Okay. Fast forward a couple of years. And I don't think I saw the movie at that point. It was like a year later or so. And I'm watching the Academy Awards, I think it was. And I guess it was up for something or whatever. And I look at the woman. I'm like, hey, that's the woman I was sitting next to. It was Vera Famiglia.
That's funny.
I know she was at the time. She's nice, very nice. Anyway, let me give you some insight into GoPro. GoPro, the shares of the company that has been on the downstroke for such a long time due to the fact that, you know, once you get a GoPro, they don't go bad so much and they don't seem to have that many upgrades. And obviously they're having some difficulty with their one product. But the shares have been on the move recently. They're up about 50% since the lows in July.
Huh.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. There's a level on the chart. If you look at the actual chart, there's this open pocket of air above where the shares are currently trading, which could continue to squeeze some shorts, which is the name of the game these days, right? Kind of reverse it and squeeze them. They have a pretty big short interest on them. I don't know if they're coming out with a new product. They've mentioned a few things. There's something, I guess, the GoPro 5 or so coming out. But, you know, still there's some issues with... I had the GoPro on a trip I took last week. I didn't realize this. Maybe it's just the GoPro, and maybe this is just the nature of this. But as soon as the GoPro hit the water, so I submerged it, let's say, a half a foot, the Wi-Fi connection between the GoPro camera and my iPhone, so I was trying to look at my iPhone as it was underwater, totally disappeared.
Yeah, well, it's because you can't do what you just wanted to do.
Yeah, it seems that way. Is that the nature of all?
The Wi-Fi connection, that frequency just gets absorbed by water. You don't have to even get that deep.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. It just turned off. I was hoping to kind of like pan the bottom and look for lobsters instead of going down there.
Dreamer.
And getting the
hook a cable to it. You can make it work that way.
Yeah, right. Okay, but then...
You can't get a radio signal through water. It's not possible.
Well, I mean, I learned that.
Unless it's sonar.
So is there no... There's no... Yeah, it's got to be something.
Long waves you can get through.
Maybe like a cable. You're right.
You need a special radio. I mean, the submarines can do it.
They don't do it by cable? Oh, you mean... right. What do they have?
Yeah, radio signal. They have these long antennas. I actually have one of them.
A submarine?
There was... A submarine antenna. I picked it up when I was an air pollution inspector, and I was inspecting. They had the shipyards over in Richmond where they're taking apart all these World War II boats, ships, and there was a submarine, and they were just chopping it up with all these torches, and there was this big antenna, and it was laying there. And I said, "What are you guys going to do with this antenna?" He says, "You can have it." So I took it, and the thing's about, I think it's about 15 feet long or longer. It's huge because you need to get these kind of waves to get through the water. Yeah, that's my story.
So now, where were you? I'm speechless, actually. Where were you living when you acquired that antenna?
I was living in a house down.
On the East Coast.
It was the West Coast.
I thought you said Richmond.
Yeah, Richmond, California.
Oh, I thought it was Richmond, Virginia.
No, Richmond, California.
Okay, and you've been schlepping that around and storing it somewhere.
Yeah, it's in the backyard.
As what, like a statue? Kind of just a
No, it's just laying down. It's like, just a stupid antenna. What am I supposed to do? I can't get rid of it.
There's no market?
It was probably a bad idea to collect it.
Put a Craigslist. I have a submarine antenna for anyone who wants it. Pick it up. Yeah. Pole vaulters. Calling all pole vaulters. So, all right, let's talk about Twilio. You know about this stock, this company?
I know about the company. I don't know about the stock.
So Twilio is a company that integrates, well, they integrate a lot of messaging, phone. They're kind of like, when I was first introduced to them, that I'm using them. I actually use them. I interface them with Salesforce to do some outbound messaging and a few other things. They have all these API calls that you can do, and you can actually have your programs and web-based systems send emails. You can actually do a variety of voice applications, all sorts of applications to make web and other software work for messaging and communications. I'm sure they have other things besides that, but that's a big part of it. And they had an IPO recently. And this is unbelievable, this IPO. It's up 180% since July, making it one of the best IPOs this year.
Yeah.
And it just broke out. I mean, it just went crazy the last few days, from 45 to 65.
Well, it doubled since June.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. I don't know how this company is really worth this, but maybe it is.
This could be just rank speculation. Maybe it's a good short.
Yeah, could be. I would look into this as a short. I mean, it's gonna plow higher, and there's obviously a lot of people getting in. But the last few days, that spike from, what is that, about 42 to about 65 or so? This is a couple of days. Yeah, that's a pretty good move. I don't care what's going on there. Now, one of the things you see, this pattern. Let me show you this pattern. So you notice the pattern started. By the way, if you want to follow along, go to DH Unplugged. The show notes for this episode, you can see the actual chart. Just click it and you can bring this up and you can follow what I'm about to tell you here. So this is an interesting pattern that you see time and time again with IPOs. Sometimes it's a short-term pattern, like this one's only a few months. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. But you see how it IPO'd back in, end of June.
Yeah.
And then it kind of moved up and then it moved sideways for a while. Now, a lot of times you'll see that kind of, at that point where it starts to move sideways, a little bit of a dip down, because a lot of the players that bought stock either on the IPO or possibly even a little bit after the IPO, like, oh, you know what? I'll take my profits. I'm done.
Yeah. You got to be decent, 10 points on it, maybe.
But when you see that rotation back down and then it starts moving higher and then you break above that, you can see that imaginary line across about 43. You see?
Right.
When it breaks above that, and exactly what happened here, it just runs. That's exactly what happened.
What happens now? Is it going to keep going, or is it going to?
I don't know.
Is it going to go down now? Is it going to go down later?
I would say that you have now a lot of thrust in there. A lot of people are interested in it. Obviously, a lot of the traders and short-term players are pushing it. I would venture to say that you're going to probably see another breakdown towards the 45 range, potentially. As we've seen time and time again, especially if and when markets hit a little bit of a pocket of selling.
Is it going to, does this pattern reemerge?
Yeah, I've seen it time and time again. Again, it's a very similar pattern. Sometimes it's more spread out over time. And you usually want to get into the IPO after you break above that kind of consolidation point over time. So that broke up. And then what happens is, you know, you could play it for a few days and then it usually will start backtracking.
No, we have to follow this.
Yep. That's TWLO is the symbol. And a lot of times you see that there's so much excitement in the initial, you get up to the first earnings announcement, and then there's like, wow, really? We just bought a stock for 65, really valued at probably maybe 40. Because don't forget that when this came out, it was maybe trading at about 20, opened up at 25 the first day. And so when they were pricing this out, they had in mind what was the right price for this. And also because it's an IPO, there's only a certain amount of shares outstanding. So therefore, there's a supply-demand squeeze going on initially here until they need more money for something. So keep a look at Twilio.
Got it.
I titled this this episode, Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the River. You've seen that movie? Jerry Lewis?
No.
Lewis movie. I like that.
Jerry Lewis movie. Okay.
I've always liked that phrase. Because it's so typical of government and excuse-laden type of rationale for something. In other words, you know what? The bridge should go up. But in this case, we're going to lower the river. In other words, lower the bar. Take the way it makes it look like the bridge is actually going up when it's not. Fed speaker
Yellen.
Williams, actually, in this case.
Oh, Williams. Okay. Williams. That's from, he's from what bank?
I don't know.
Okay.
Fed's Williams. He says he's considering raising or replacing the 2% inflation target. So this is a target that we have gotten to recently. We've gotten to our unemployment.
Supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly. We've gotten to our unemployment rate, supposedly, 4.9%, which was, of course, back when it was 6.5%. They're like, we're going to stop with the whole thing when it's 6.5. Blew right through there. We're going to stop when it's 5.5. Blew right through there. Now we're at 4.9%, and they're still keeping low interest rates. Well, now they're saying that, there's a need for fiscal policies, and we should look at maybe targeting nominal GDP, not inflation. So now all of a sudden they can't get to their inflation number, or they're unwilling to admit that they're getting close to this level, but the amount of stimulus they're providing through monetary policy is just not working. And the more they do, it doesn't seem that it's becoming any more effective. And they looked at what happened in Japan with the negative interest rates. They look what happened in Europe with the negative interest rates. And they're saying, maybe we got to shift, lower the river. So what we're going to do is maybe target GDP, which is kind of ridiculous, I thought, because GDP is not going anywhere anyway. And unless they are just thinking that, if we do any more stimulus and the things go the way they're going, we're going to break through that 2%. And then we're in contrast to what we said we were going to do. So therefore, let's just do away with that entirely and just go after GDP, which we really can't do anything about. But this way we could keep on providing all this great stimulus. You follow that twisted logic?
It's very twisted.
Yeah. But that's the Fed. That's what they're in a major jam. They have elevated themselves to economic gods. And everybody's following along because why not? It's kind of free money.
No, you got to follow somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Now, at the same time, when they're talking about removing the 2% inflation target, U.S. consumer prices, the CPI, came in this week unchanged because we had falling gasoline prices. I don't know about you, but we're at $2 over here. there was some solid gains in industrial output, home building. Also, the numbers that came out suggested there was a pickup in economic activity that would kind of push the Fed into the position of, hey, you know what? Things are in a position that we could raise interest rates. But again, they don't want that to happen. So maybe they'll just...
So they're not going to do it.
Yeah, not going to do it. The September is still on the table. The September rate hike is still on the table. And there was another Fed guy this week who said that he doesn't think there will be more than one rate hike over the next number of years.
Well, wasn't there some time, like a couple of years ago, we were talking about they said that there's no rate hike for the foreseeable future, and they were pushing it out to 5 years or something?
Yeah, I think we're here.
I mean, they keep saying this stuff. I mean, why don't they just, maybe they should have less meetings.
Less meetings and less of the parade. The amount of conferences these guys go to, and now even small luncheons that they give speeches at, you know, like maybe they're meeting an economic club of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
They do a little luncheon or even a breakfast for that matter. And they get up there and say a few things. It's like broadcast, like it's a official report out of the Fed. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's the news. It's the media. There was an interesting article out of Trim Tabs. Now, I haven't, the last time, this is an interesting group. Trim Tabs does a lot of research on alternative measures for, let's say, employment. They say, you know, throw away this whole idea of the official quote unquote unemployment rate. Okay. Just, it's crap.
Well, we've done that on this show.
Yeah. But what you should look at is, for example, payroll taxes. Let's count up the payroll taxes. We could find out how much money is being earned by reversing the process, right? And then that'll give us a good example of really true payroll at any given time, snapshot it. So they do that. That's kind of interesting. This guy is, I think,
that's got to be a falling number.
Yeah. Especially with no wage increases. But that's, again, it's another hard thing to really look at, because then, you know, what if you have people earning more, but not more people on the payroll? So, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. I guess nothing's perfect. But this guy, I remember very distinctly, I had this guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head here. I'm thinking Charlie, but that's not right. He was on my podcast, The Disciplined Investor, back, I think it was probably 2009, we'll call it.
The trim tabs guy?
Yeah, the head guy. And I think at that time, the S&P was sub 1,000. Okay, this is when we're really in the thick of things, okay?
Yeah.
And he was like all over how this thing is going down to 500. And shorting everything at that point, right when the market was turning. And he did a lot of that research due to some of his work on employment and all this stuff. And obviously he was right at the bottom. He called it terribly wrong.
I've seen that happen. Right at the bottom is when they call a new bottom, and right. It's not.
Exactly. Now, this guy has something interesting, I thought. He did some research. His research is good. Forget about his market calls. He talked about how announced stock buybacks during this earnings season have fallen to the lowest level since December of 2012, averaging just 3.3.
That's interesting.
Just 3.3.
We used to talk about stock buybacks a lot on the show, and then now that you mention it,
there's not a lot of going on.
No.
He said that, just averaging just 3.3 for 18 minutes. It's 3.3. What is that? I got to think of what that means. Averaging just 3.3, I guess, the total number with 1.8 billion daily. So buyback activity has been disappointing in earnings season, says David Senchi, who's the CEO of TrimTabs. That's not the guy. He's a guy who works there. He says the reluctance to pull the trigger on share repurchases suggests corporate leaders are becoming less enthusiastic about what they see ahead, which in a way I don't buy that either, because we know that corporate buybacks, they just, you know, they're not necessarily doing it because they're just so shot up about their stock. Sometimes they do it to manipulate their stock and to massage the earnings. But it is interesting that there are a lot less.
The logic to me seems the opposite.
What?
That they wouldn't be doing buybacks because they see if they're doing buybacks in the first place to make their EPS look better,
mm-hmm.
which was our thesis,
mm-hmm.
yours mainly.
Yeah.
And if they see good times ahead, they would say, well, now the EPS will take care of itself with better revenue, and they would stop the buyback thing.
Right.
And maybe, if anything, put out some more stock, do just the opposite, so they could ride it into an upswing.
Right. So it would be a non-event with more stock outside. Yeah, I don't know. It seems that for some reason, for whatever the reason, maybe it's because of the fear that interest rates were going higher, which they weren't. Maybe they're up to their neck in share buybacks and debt at this point. We know that.
I think that would be my guess, by the way, the thing you just said last.
The amount that we've discussed, the amount of debt outstanding is higher than it's ever been. So maybe companies are just choking on their own debt, and therefore they're not going to do share buybacks, which were financed by the debt a lot of to some degree.
Yeah, it's becoming ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about some cycles here, because I know this is your wheelhouse.
I like cycles.
John's wheelhouse. So if you look at, we could chart this. You could look at 10 or 20 year seasonality, where you look at, you know, each month, what was the return? What was the average return for each month? And look at that over time and all that. And then throw out some things about, you know, good months, bad months, and kind of normalize that and come up with those stuff. I've been hearing a good amount of, I'll call them murmurs for lack of anything else, that there's some backtracking or downside potential for markets in September. Now, you know, several seasonality indicators showing this. There's a variety of other reasons why, something about pre-presidential election cycles just before that. And then looking at the entry into, this is something I thought was interesting. I was just at a meeting with a guy who's big on cycles. And he was talking about, and he bases a lot of his buy-sell decisions on these seasonality things, which I think, I don't know, kind of weird.
You know, it can be done.
It can be done, but you don't know the magnitude of the downside. But all right, so let's go with the fact that September could be a possible downside. And I can think of a lot of reasons why myself that could be. You know, it's after the summer. You know, you're finally getting into the last part of the year. Valuations are high. You know, all the things we've talked about. Okay, all right. And September has a history of not being the kindest month. Now, you also talked about this meeting that I was at about this year seven cycle. That years ending with the number seven seem to be tough on markets. So we started like saying, you know, look at 2007 and 1987 and 1937, and kind of went through these numbers. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm thinking to myself at this meeting without any research in front of me, just kind of just listening. I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, you know, tough years. Wow, that's kind of weird. I didn't think of that ever before, right? So I looked tonight before the show. I will put this down as a topic to talk about. And I looked. 1987, terrible crash. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
The market was up that year.
Right. That crash happens every 80 years.
2007. That was remember that? The whole housing crisis, right? 2007.
Yeah, but that really happened in 2008.
Right. 2007 was an up year.
Yes. 2007 was bogus. So it was not a down
right, year. So I looked at all these different years, and I tracked back the Dow Jones, I don't know, 25, 30 years, and I'm like, this sounded good when he said it, as I was just kind of nodding along with him, but kind of threw it out the window after that, because I don't see any real... Now, maybe...
I will say this. It does match in the 40-year cycle, the seventh year of the 40-year cycle in that last decade. The 37 would be one of those years. 77 would be one of those years. 77 was a... They're kind of bottoms. They're secondary bottoms. The first bottom took place in 33, and then the market ran up in 37, and then it crashed again back to normal. It didn't go down. It may have been an up year. And 77, very similar, and I think we're going to see the same thing in 2017 because the same is part of that 40-year cycle. So that comes into play. And it does, and I think it stems from when it really got attention was in 1857. 1857 was also part of this that 40-year cycle, and it was the last decade of it. And in 1857, because there was a gold rush that pumped $15 trillion of today's money into the economy, there was no real depression, but you still had this problem in 1857. 1857, if you look at the literature, turns out everyone defines 1857 as America's first true depression. Well, and that's when the books start coming out. There are books written in 1858, talking about the 1857. Same thing happened in 77. I remember I have a copy of it. There was this guy that used to be a stock market stock picker named Ruff, R-U-F-F, and he did this newsletter called Rough Times. And Ruff came out with a book in 1977, which coincidentally I have a copy of. And in that year, he's doing exactly what you talked about earlier in the show, predicting that it's going to that 1977 is going to be the beginning of a never ending depression, and then when Reagan gets in office, that'll change. The never ending depression never happened.
So his business became rough.
Well, that's the last you heard of the guy.
Yeah,
gotta be careful.
Yeah. So back to this. So in backtracking a moment on this. So the years with the seven, as you mentioned. You know, 2007, maybe it wasn't a good year. Maybe there's some problems within the period. 87, big crash in the, you know, in the 1987.
Yeah, that was pretty much of a flash crash.
Right.
By the way, and that will happen again in 2067, I think.
Oh, that's good.
86, yeah.
I don't think I can buy any options that far into the future.
No, but you can put it in your diary.
Where are we going to be in 67? 50 years from now. 50 years from now. I don't think I'm going to be able to read my diary. Unless some miracle drug comes
up. Your kids.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Sell short.
Yeah, Dvorak said 57. 57.
87. Or 67. 67,
yeah. But what's interesting is, though, it is possible that this year seven cycle actually is a year that there is difficulty in the markets. Let's forget about how it ends up throughout the whole year, right? Because if you have a 20 or 25% drop in the market and somehow magically it was up prior and there's a big drop, or it's up after because people are buying in, I mean, that's something to be take a look at. Like I said, like 87 and some of the others.
87 is a classic.
Yeah, exactly. So 2007, 87, what was 97 like? Was 97 a bad year?
I'm thinking about it. No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. The dot so was the beginning of the dot-com nuttiness.
Yeah, right.
So it wasn't a bad year at all. It was a good year.
Right. Let's shift over to Japan. It seems that Japanese economic growth is slowing, or can't even slow. I mean, how do you slow from stop?
How is it slowing?
GPS misses again. And now this is clearly more evidence that the Abenomics plan, that is the, you know, the three arrows in the quivers and the arrow thing and this crap that they talk about, and all they have is you know, this whole concept. I find the Japanese very, the Japanese people are very able to be manipulated. They're very, it's easy to kind of just, you know, kind of put a carrot in front of them, it seems, or maybe a nice piece of sushi or uni or something like that, whatever you want to call it for that, and just kind of keep them going in front. I mean, because there's been 20 years of disappointment in economics. A lot of it is because of their demographics. You know, their older population outweighs their younger population. No big burst. And a lot of that has to do with post-World War II. And now what's happening is they kind of went into a very aggressive stance, as we've talked about, with negative interest rates. And miraculously, just today, as a matter of fact, today, the yen rallied below $100 per dollar.
Oh,
in trade, it was at 99.50. Let me see where it is now. It's at
I missed that
100.5 right now.
Okay, that's where it should be, by the way, right there.
Yeah, rallying off the bottom. I mean, this is because, of course, once the Japanese markets open and the Bank of Japan awakens to a real day of trading, they go in and they actively go in and buy dollars and sell yen, or buy other currencies. They sell yen. We talked about this. Actually, I tweeted this earlier. I said, watch for a break of 100 and then a ramp, you know, the other direction, because they will intervene. The yen is now up 18% year to date against the dollar.
Hmm.
That's enormous. 18%. I mean, think about that. That means their products are 18% more expensive this year, right now, than they were, let's say, you know, 8-9 months ago.
Yeah.
And if, as they are such a strongly export-driven country, that's a bad thing. All right, moving right along here. You know, I don't know if you've read this, but Obamacare is getting the shaft recently. Aetna, a couple other companies.
Oh, yeah, everyone's bailing.
Yeah, bailing. Aetna is reducing its presence on the individual exchanges starting in 2017. They're going to be stopping offering policies on the exchanges in 11 of the 15 states where it currently operates. They're only going to be offering, quote-unquote, Obamacare in Delaware, Iowa, Nebraska, and Virginia, which, by the way, probably ties right out to their profitability in that area.
You think?
Yep. Amazing, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, this was supposed to be, and I think the increase in rates is something like 17 to 20% for Obamacare. This is supposed to be the way to put
Affordable Care Act.
Affordable, right. This is supposed to put a cap on those greedy bastards of insurance companies, right? And this is supposed to make sure that everybody can get insurance. But everybody along the way said, listen, if you're going to put all these uninsurable people on these plans and require it, that's going to be bad. And then I think the real fascinating thing was, after this all started, you saw the insurance companies, their stocks skyrocket. That made no sense.
It made sense in the scheme of things.
Yeah. But it wasn't supposed to be so profitable. And now it's turning the other side. So now as more people, I guess, as more companies leave the exchanges, it's going to be possibly even more costly because you're going to have more adverse selection.
No, that thing's a mess.
For those companies to stay in. Volkswagen's still on the hot seat. We know all the things that have happened. Now they're saying that owners in the United States that have the cars that more problems. Diesel.
Right, with the phony baloney software.
Yeah, we'll receive about $20,000 per car as compensation for the company's diesel deception. And
you should have bought a couple of cars.
Yeah, this is interesting. In Europe, most the difference is if you're in the United States, you get $20,000 or so. And there's another thing, you could sell back the car for $20,000. They'll give you $10,000 plus a fix it. They'll fix it or whatever. You get some choices. Not, this isn't finalized yet, but here it is. In Europe, you get a software update and a short length of plastic tubing.
What's the plastic tubing for? You stick it in the exhaust pipe and kill yourself?
I don't know, but I guess maybe the tubing connects to something, maybe back to, maybe they cut the tube over there or something like that, that goes to the emission control. And maybe
so if you had a choice and you had one of these cars, yeah. I mean, I take the $20,000 for sure.
Yeah.
But would you really want to get it fixed?
I don't think there's a real way to fix this thing. And some people,
I don't think you want it fixed. It give you more power, right. Better gas mileage. It would just be a heavy, it's just a polluter. It's the only thing. It just pollutes a lot, but it's a hot little hot rod.
So here you are, you got this Volkswagen and you're polluting with your little, 3-liter engine or whatever your deal is. And now you're next to a Mack truck that's spewing this crap out of the top of it, right? Are you going to be that upset that you're just a little polluter?
It wouldn't bother me.
No. Home Depot reported a 9.3% rise in quarterly profit and boosted its full year's guidance as it kept a tight lid on costs and benefited from a strong U.S. housing market. Again, we haven't seen any commentary out of these companies about the currency tailwind. I haven't heard one, not one, in all of the earnings so far that are done pretty much for the thousands of companies that came out.
That's funny.
I haven't heard one constant currency earnings at all.
Yeah, but when there's a headwind,
yeah,
all they do is whine.
Yeah. We need like a bullshit button or something like that. You know, like a bullshit sound.
God.
No? North Korea. This is kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but first of all, did you see like the Vietnamese divers?
Oh no, I did not. I did not watch that event.
Was it the Vietnamese? It was one of these Asian companies. I think it was Vietnamese. I don't know what the story was exactly, but they go off the springboard. They beautiful. They do the little stutter step up. They do the pointed toes and they go up in the air and they come down and then they go up flying and they do a couple somersaults and blah blah blah. Right. That's how the thing goes. Yeah. Right. So they do that. Then they're supposed to open up and then go straight in the water, right? These guys are doing belly flops. And I'm not kidding. It's like they purposely did this. The weirdest thing you ever saw.
Really?
Yeah.
I know I saw one guy jump up and down and then he decided not to jump at all.
Oh, really? Nah, not going to do it. But no, there was some weird, weird dives that I saw. It was really weird. I don't know what that was all about. Anyway, North Korea.
Belly flop.
North Korea.
Splash the judges.
So, I guess Samsung decided to give all Olympic athletes free Galaxy S7 handsets, phones, right?
Yeah.
And I guess they were pre-programmed. You could put for the opening ceremonies, for example, you could put if you put USA in it, it would do maybe paint the whole thing and say USA with maybe a flag behind and stuff. So you can kind of hold it up during the opening ceremonies. So then you get to keep your Galaxy 7. That's very nice. North Korea says, that's a South Korean product. You are not to have these. They wouldn't let them have it.
Oh, that's not nice.
Yeah. It's supposed to be such a love fest, isn't it?
Yeah, love fest.
All right, let's get on to a few other things. By the way, dhunplugged.com is the place to go where you can find all this information. You can find the show notes. You can find also, of course, how to donate to the show. Thank you so much for all those people that donated this week. We have a couple of people. Something I got to check out with our system because for whatever reason, some people put a subscription or a recurring payment.
Yeah.
And it failed. Keeps failing. I don't know if it's our system. It's not allowed or something like that.
No. The PayPal, if these are PayPal donations.
Yeah.
Yeah, PayPal has a little box that on almost all the non-recurring payment types. In other words, if you have a type of payment that is a straight donation, a straight number, that can be any amount, especially if you get to choose the amount, choose any old amount. When the box comes up, it shows a, would you like to make this recurring?
Right.
And there's a little checkbox. If you check that box, that means, and it gives you a range. You want to make it recurring every week, every month, whatever. And so you check that box, and then every month, let's say, that same payment goes through.
Well, I'm
and
just
that
telling
should
you,
work.
I'm just telling you that I've gotten alerts that payment has failed. We'll try again in 5 days from three different parties.
Interesting.
Payment has failed. So I wrote to PayPal. So we'll see what happens.
Shouldn't fail.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But anyway, if you do, if you love the show, if you're getting some great stock ideas, and we know a lot of people have come to me.
Made money.
Yeah, exactly.
On our discussion.
Yeah, you could send, or if you're just entertained by us or disgusted by us, it doesn't really matter.
Yes, we need money for being disgusting.
Yeah, we gotta find more things to really piss you off. But you go over to the show notes, you can go over to the site, you can just click the button. And matter of fact, whatever you're doing right now, you should probably just stop and just go over there and just check that little button out, what it does. It's kind of interesting what happens when you push the button. That's what I think is really cool. Really, you've probably never seen this on the web before, by the way. I'm pretty sure people haven't seen this. If you go over, just take my word. Click the button, see what happens. You'll see. Let's talk about the close to the pin here. We're at that time of the show. We're currently running two different... close to the pin. One is the DH Unplugged Closer to the Pin Cup, which is going to have a select group of people that are winners. And
those invitational.
People. Yep, exactly. And they will be up for the big award at the end of the year. Now, you can go over there, and right now it's closed to new entries, I believe. It's definitely closed to new entries. And the winner will be at the end of this month. We are currently running Shake Shack, which will be ending, I believe, at the end of this week, I believe. Shake Shack is came out with earnings this week, and they had, I would say, disappointing same store growth. It was kind of just like at 4%, which is for a go-go.
It's not very go-go.
Not impressive at all. Earnings came in better, and revenues came in a little bit better, but they're opening up new stores, and still, this is not very impressive. So we'll talk about the particulars of... This week, we have Shake Shack there, and I also chose Shake Shack as a weekly stock pick. So we'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh, you did?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's working out pretty well, actually. Now, last show, we talked about Zika. Now, I don't know if anybody, by the way...
What's the symbol?
We talked about Zika, which is kind of now, all of a sudden, Puerto Rico is calling for a state of emergency. Related to Zika outbreak, and we had this town in Wynwood.
Anything to avoid paying their debt.
Is that what? We need exactly $693 billion. Coincidence, that's the amount that we have to pay back. But we need that for the Zika. That's kind of funny. So a couple of things. First of all, I mentioned a variety of stocks last week that could benefit from Zika. Remember that?
Yes.
BioCryst Pharmaceuticals, BCRX, rocketed. Not because I said it, because I'm just telling you, it did very well. We talked about a few others which are on the site as well. And obviously, there's more and more concern that this is something that's spreading. I wonder, though, do you think this is just a summer thing? You know, because mosquitoes are much more active in the summer, right? Is this going to dissipate through the next...
You're looking for a short now?
No, not at all. This is not stock market related. It's health related.
Well, I think we actually on the No Agenda show, we conclude this is just a bogus attempt to get $1.9 billion to meet our promises that we made during the Ebola crisis.
Yeah.
And we just need that money because we promised people this money.
But can't we just get the money from the losses that we pretend to say that this post office is racking up every year?
I think that post office scam is done.
How can it be? It's done. They're losing money, but meanwhile they reduce.
They're not really losing money. That's the joke of it.
Of course, but they tell everybody they're losing money, and then they reduce the price of a stamp. How many times in your lifetime has stamps gone?
I've never
backwards?
Seen that in my life.
Went from 47 to 46.
Yeah, that was very strange. Well, because nobody buys these stamps anyway. There's kind of a variable pricing model, and you buy a forever stamp.
Yeah, but the forever stamps lost value.
Yes, they did, for the first time ever.
Right. But you're not buying stamps. You're using a machine, let's say. We have a machine in our office. You weigh the thing, you slap the thing in, and it puts the right price on it. And you, yeah, and just, you fill up. For, but it's not like everybody's like, I'm going to shop. Let's see. This provider of postage is 48 cents, 40. This one's 43. I'm going to use this guy because he's cheaper. I mean, they have a monopoly on the postage. There's not many choices.
Yeah, well.
Maybe they thought.
I think it's a good deal.
It is a good deal. I mean, if you compare it to the overnight express or the even the 3-day or even just a UPS, I mean, email's still a better deal.
Email's the best deal. But you can't put things in the email.
You can't put secure things.
You only take pictures of stuff.
Right. But you know what? Everybody says, well, don't send secure documents through the email. It can be intercepted, right? It's on the web.
Yeah.
The mail,
very easy to intercept.
The regular mail is much better. I'm like,
well, it's also a federal law. It's protected by federal laws against somebody stealing it.
Why don't they have a federal law on email?
No one's ever put a bill in that makes sense.
Yeah, faxes is still.
And I think people like Google would be against it because they like to open your email and use it to figure out what kind of stuff you want to buy.
I like it. What about faxes? Fax is still the best, most secure.
It is.
What? It's not secure.
I don't know if it's the most secure. I think there could be man in the middle attacks that could intercept a fax. It's not like is it encrypted in some way other than just the nature of the fax itself?
I mean, it's going one place to the other place and then it's done. It's not being housed anywhere. It's not being stored anywhere.
Yeah, maybe. It might be. It's an interesting point. Mm.
Anyway, so Zika. So the question was, is this just a summer thing? And more importantly, what's the outlook on the potential for consumers if Zika continues to spread? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is going to drop dead as soon as they get that money.
So is it money and then miraculously it goes away?
Come on. Yeah. Well, look, okay, winter killed it.
Kind of like Ebola went away very quickly once the bill was passed.
Yeah, Ebola. Boom, gone. What happened? I don't know.
It was taking over the world. Everybody put up money and then it disappeared. Crude oil. This is really fascinating. So oil was clipping below 40, right? It was getting kind of moving down there.
That didn't last.
And then miraculously, the Saudi minister from OPEC says, we're going to definitely work on something to support prices. Like they did twice before. And now oil surges above $46 in the last few days. Kind of track back a little bit. Let's see. Track back about.
What are they doing? Dumping the oil in a pit? What are they doing? What specifically are they doing?
They're going to talk about, hold for this, possible production freezes or output freezes. This is exactly what they did a few months ago. They raised the price and all that. Everybody realized they're full of crap. They just did this to manipulate the price because it's like, hey, prices are low. Let's do this again. And then they have meetings and they don't agree to anything. And then everybody looks at inventories on the rise and rising even more. And then this is exactly what happens with the yen. The yen gets to a certain price and the Japanese government steps in and says things and does a little saber rattling and, kind of spreads rumors about, well, sends up a trial balloon about this or says that, we're going to maybe intervene or whatever. The OPEC is in their best interest to do the same thing. We got to move along. We got lots to talk about here. Okay, let's see. A couple of quick things here. We'll talk about this next time, about this real cool NeuroMama shares that rose to a $35 billion valuation. It's not even a company. It's not even doing anything.
It's short to me.
Yeah, it's closed. They shut it down. Self-service technology may offer convenience and speed, but it seems that there's a much better opportunity for thieves. I always wondered about this, they got that stupid thing where you put the scanned item into a bag that's supposedly a scale. But how easy is it just to throw something in your wagon as you're doing that? Seems that there's these brilliant professors from the University of, how do you say that? Leicester?
In England? Leicester.
Is that Leicester? That's how you say Leicester? In England said that the use of self-service lanes and smartphone apps to make purchases generate a loss rate of nearly 4%, more than double the average.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And finally, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told fellow Democrats to change their phone numbers and not let family members read their text messages after a cybersecurity breach led to the release of personal information of members of Congress and their staff. She says she received scores of mostly obscene and sick calls, voicemails, and text messages. Please be
Hey, Nancy, welcome to the new age of the internet.
Yeah. Hey, Pelosi, you're so hot. Nancy.
Yeah, I can just imagine.
She never had so much fun. But anyway, you know, or on the other hand, we can deconstruct this and talk about this in no agenda terms, that obviously she has been doing some things that she shouldn't have been doing on her cell phone and created this whole thing to blame, you know, maybe she was giving away secrets. Maybe she was trying to bust up the Trump campaign or do something to bring Clinton on. And she was part of the whole deal trying to press down Sanders and, you know, this whole thing. And she just wants to obfuscate this whole thing and say, oh, don't look at your cell phones.
Well, that's not going to do it.
No, not going to do it. What are you writing for PC Magazine this week?
I'm on part three of my 30 years with PC Magazine. I discussed the years 1996 to 2006. What happened and what effect it had on today.
That was an exciting age of technology right there.
Actually, the 10 years before that was where it was really hopping.
Really?
Yeah.
What was 10 years before? It was 19... Yeah, I'm trying to think of my first PC was I had an Atari something or other. A Commodore 64. Was that the first one?
No, but you shouldn't even have that embarrassing statement.
Why? Commodore 64 it was a terrible machine.
Yeah, totally terrible.
Oh, it was terrible. My parents bought it. All you could do was write your name on it and make it come across the screen 100 times.
Yeah, you do that.
That was the whole program.
They didn't buy you. How old were you in 80? It would be 86 that we're talking about for the golden age.
So 86, I was 17.
Oh, okay. Well, you couldn't be expected.
No, I wasn't. That was not right. I was 86. I was 21.
Oh, well, you should have had a good piece of gear by then.
Yeah, by then I did. That was the first year. 87 was my first car phone. I had the Oki.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it cost me like $2,200. And the only thing was... You never wanted to use it. It was so expensive.
Yeah, things change.
All right, let's talk about the stocks. This is a game that we play each and every week. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz, company clients may own securities that are mentioned. We'll duly note those. And of course, if you use any of our ideas at all, make sure you do your research. We are not taking responsibility for any of your losses. Your gains, you can tithe to us.
There you go.
So why don't you read off this beautiful list?
Let me find the list. I'm always, for some reason, I'm not on my game.
I get this image as we go through this. I get this image of just kind of you trying to fumble around, find your glasses. This is what I see here in my mind. Fumble around, find your glasses, and then under a bunch of papers, you found your mouse somewhere, and then you kind of got to get to the screen. Is that somewhere okay, accurate?
So we do have a couple of big gainers. In fact, one of the old ones from 525, 2016, the Express Inc. that you had a buy on is up 15% off of a triple bottom bounce.
And that was after some very bad earnings.
And then there was another one, which is Barclays, which is another one of yours. You're the one winning today.
Well, we share Barclays. We share Barclays.
Oh, we share that one, yeah, 16.5. That's up, but that is your pick. And then we've got a short on Shake Shack, which you... just recently picked, and that's up 11 already.
Yep.
That's like a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was the pick of the day for sure.
Yep.
The other stuff is always is the Herbalife for short. That's one of yours is just dead money.
Right.
It doesn't done anything really. And then you have another one, which is the Sarepta Therapeutics, which got bounced.
Yep.
And that's done. And so everything else is green. It's actually a pretty good looking pile of stocks.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. I don't have any picks this week. I mean, there's a few things I was thinking that maybe, you know, you short, Twilio as but I may let that play out a little bit longer.
Yeah, because that's an easy one to get bounced out.
There was a stock today that I've from a long. This is like a stock from my yesteryears called Stem Cell Research, symbol STMEM. It was up 540% today.
You should have picked it yesterday.
Yeah, I know. But this is a stock that's been in the zero land for forever.
Oh, you think it's going to get, you going to short it?
No. I'll be knocked out of the first tick. Either way.
Probably. Yeah, it's true. Well, I got one.
Okay.
I based on one insider who's a big time trader. This guy is constantly buying and selling and buying and selling. Netflix what's that entertainment software company? Electronic Arts. And he's one of these directors on these companies, and it's Jay Hoag. And he just bought himself $27 million worth of this stock, which I'm going to put on the list. Netflix.
Netflix again?
Yeah.
You have Netflix on there.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
Where is it?
Netflix is right in the middle. You're up 4%.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I'm doubling down. I'm not going to put it on there then.
I'm
not paying much attention. Let me take a look.
Wait, Netflix is the stock, right?
Yeah,
Netflix. Yeah, look what it says, NFLX, Netflix. It's right in the middle, 727, Momo Insider.
Yeah, there it is. Oh, well, I'd be buying more then. And it's another, this is a different guy, though, I think.
Yeah, the other guy was, well, what's this guy's position at the company?
He's a director. Mm. So this is another, he's buying $27 million. So I'm not going to obviously buy it because I have it already. Like the dumbest thing ever on the show. But I'm going to just point it out that this guy's going all in. Hmm. And so, he's doing it at 95 and I'm in at 91. So I guess I'm in pretty good shape.
So now that tagging on to this double Netflix call, the image of you fumbling around with looking for your glasses.
Yeah, no, that's what you jinxed me.
It's right. It's still very solid in my mind.
You jinxed me. Fumbling around, but buying the same stock twice.
Yeah, I'm going to buy. I'm thinking, Sevcon. I like that company, Sevcon.
Okay. Well, maybe I didn't get enough sleep.
Let me just think what other companies are out there that could be very interesting. I mean, I've looked at a few of them recently. I mean, you know, we had today a big drop for... what's the name of the company? They're the natural food, Hain's Celestial, natural food company. They're down to 28% today.
Wow. But, I think that sounds like a good bet.
Yeah. They delayed some, there was some issue about how they were paying.
So it's a financial issue.
Yeah. It's a financial issue, right?
Sales issue.
Right. And they delayed this because of accounting irregularities and they have to look at their systems and blah, blah. Never good with what they're talking about. It's just not, it sends a...
No, that doesn't sound good.
But if they come in reasonable and there's nothing, if they didn't miscalculate or misappropriate where the money was coming in, you know, this reminds me of MicroStrategy years ago. Love the stock. I've told the story before real quick. I wake up on, I think it was my birthday, and I'm like, wow, the stock split. That's so great. We owned it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Stock split. People start buying and all that. So I'm coming to the office and call, hey, stock split? Nope. Stock did not split.
Didn't split.
Did not split. I'm like, oh, what happened? Well, they had two parts of the business. One was selling the software and one was selling the service. The service was a five-year contract. They took all of the money from the five-year contract, brought it forward, and posted it to their current revenue.
I remember this.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
Michael Saylor was the...
Yeah.
But MicroStrategy is still going strong, and actually the company is looking good. But... I don't know if that's the same kind of situation that's going on here, whereas they were booking the revenue from their various parties or expense, whatever it was, to the wrong place. But if they didn't, this could be a good buy. I think the symbol's H-A-I-N.
Hmm.
Something to think about.
Oh, Hain. Their products are interesting because they're very aggressive with their natural this and that. I've always found their sodas. In particular, and they do other stuff to be bland.
Well, yeah, because they probably don't have any sugars and stuff in it, right?
No, they got sugars, so I think they have cane sugar, which should be tastier. But I just think they don't have enough flavor, and or they're just not doing the right kind of. They don't have anybody with a palate.
I think that people are looking for sometimes the natural foods and all that, and
they expect it to be bland.
Yeah, they expect it because if it tastes really good, they're like, oh
too much flavor. This can't
be
good.
Can't be good. We have to tree bark. That's the limit of the flavor here. Tree bark. You know,
that's actually possible.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I have. We don't want to run too far over, but you can follow The Real Dvorak on Twitter. Myself on Twitter is Andrew Horowitz. Of course, you can listen to No Agenda Show every week. And the Disciplined Investor Show as well, the podcasts that are available on iTunes and other of your favorite podcast services. Or just go to the sites. You can go to this one and find all sorts of information about all this, all the games that we play and contests that we have at dhunplugged.com. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. And that's all.
That should do it.
Yeah, that does it. All right, I'll talk to you.
Let me go find my glasses and get out of
here. Yeah, please. That'd be a good idea. Turn the light on, will you? I'll see you next week. All right, bye.
Okay.
Bye. You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.